Dua
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Plus 63 HP Podcast Reviews Edition. I'm one of your hosts, John Clemente. Alongside with me are two of my bestest best friend. I'm going to start with the man with the pink headset, Trebox. How are you doing?
Hello, excited to finally be here to talk about a top 10 movie in my book. Top 5
Yeah,
possibly.
same.
Go.
Also with us, waking up early and staying up with us is Arnie from the West Coast. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. May your knives chip and shatter, people. Go.
100%. And as you might have guessed by now by looking at the title or the thumbnail of this video, but we are diving deep into possibly one of the best cinematic experiences of late, Dune Part 2. As part of our reviews show, Plus 63 HP is a stable of podcasts where we have typically earlier in the week, Mondays and Tuesdays, we'll have a review of a TV show or a movie that we have seen recently, dive deep into it, provide our ratings and reactions so that you can be informed whether you should watch it with your friends and family. We also have a D&D show, typically dropping on Wednesdays. That's just a bunch of 40-year-old guys and a young lady experiencing her very, very first D&D campaign, recording it for posterity and sharing it into the YouTubes and into the world for you guys' adventure and excitement. We also have a curated lists of featurettes, clips, trailers that we react to so that we can be excited or not excited about content coming down the pipe. And we also have a second D&D show where Chewbacca and our other bestest best friend RJ play bad guys.
Baby.
So that occasionally drops towards the end of the week, typically Fridays. And yeah, we have a bunch of backlog content, so just keep on coming back onto the channel because you'll be seeing a lot more content almost daily until we get to a level where we're back on our weekly schedule. But again, this episode, as aforementioned, we are discussing Dune Part 2. A little bit of stats before I get onto the stats and we go into the synopsis, into the plot of the show. For the six people that have not seen this, Chewbacca and Arnie, let's give our initial impressions, non-spoilery version for those people that still need a little bit of convincing to watch the show. Let's start with you, Chewbacca.
I fucking love this movie. I love it. I love it so much. I think I cannot say anything else more or spoiling it.
Arnie?
It's not a spice dream. Austin Butler is really, really growing on me. He's really, really good,
Yay.
unfortunately.
Chewbacca has already mentioned a little bit that it might be in his, top 10 movies of all time currently as it stands. And I think I'm the one that saw this earliest. I saw this twice, or I saw it day of release, and I saw it the next day after.
I've seen it
I've
twice
seen
as
it.
well, both IMAX.
Yeah, I've seen it in regular digital, and then I've seen it in 70 millimeter, not IMAX, but 70 millimeters, so a little taller. So this is currently resting top two of my favorite movies of all time. So this suffers a little bit of benefit because it is, second half of technically a two-parter movie. But still, it is a spectacle to experience just the visuals of it, the proper storytelling. And Arnie also has alluded to it. Fucking every single person on the screen acted really, really well. So that's just, that's just great casting, great acting, great visuals, great story, great directing. That's
Nobody,
why you
yeah.
have such a acclaimed movie of late. So for those who haven't seen it and want to join our discussion of this movie, pause this, go out. If it's still on the cinemas near you, and then come back and discuss this movie with us because it's going to be a fun discussion. A little bit of stats before we go to the plot. again, directed by now coming up the ranks, as one of my most favorite directors, Denis Villeneuve, of Sicario, Dune Part One, Blade Runner 2049 fame, Prisoners also. So a lot of very heavy character-driven movies, but also spectacles, right? So I didn't like, I caught wind of him in Sicario,
Oh.
one of the movies that I am extremely impressed with, but it's so heavy I cannot rewatch it again.
I like that movie also. That surprised me. And
Great, just like
there wasn't even really a bad guy there. You know what I mean?
I think they're all either they're all
Just
bad
they're
guys
all
or they're
bad
all good.
guys.
It really doesn't. So it's just like for me, like Denis has a command of both character and visuals, so it highlights both. Again, screenplay by Denis and John Spaihts, based on the book of Frank Herbert. This is like a who's who, like a murderer's row of amazing current actors and actresses: Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, my ex-girlfriend Rebecca Ferguson. I love him so much. The surprisingly funny or surprisingly comedic Javier Bardem is there. Josh Brolin comes back. In this particular movie, we add expand on the universe. So Florence Pugh and Christopher Walken, from the Emperor side, is back. Is here. Dave Bautista also reprises his role. And then playing his brother again, the breakout, one of the more breakout star, Austin Butler here. Lots of fun facts about him. We drop like fucking killer new characters like Lea Seydoux, there for what? 5 6 minutes, but fucking rocked it. And of course, Stellan Skarsgård as like
Aaron
floating
Harkin.
Jabba the Hutt is kind of great. I've been seeing a lot, or trying to now kind of like put Greg Fraser, the cinematographer, in my crosshairs of the other things that or the things that he'll be doing in the future. I think I'll probably have him also high, like I hope, maybe not Roger Deakins high, but very, very high, because he did the Batman, another visual spectacle, very well shot. And also most recently, he is the cinematographer for The Creator. It ha The Creator, with David Washington, also in the zeitgeist, because this is where you realize that it's not the gear, right? It's not the most expensive camera and the most expensive lenses, because in The Creator, Corridor Crew did a feature on it, because he was using a camera that anybody can get, like an FX3 and an FX3. I have one of those cameras. Right. So it basically says, like, you wanted to shoot at the relatively smaller budget, and different locations, capture it perfectly, and it's going to be difficult to have rigs and set it up and all those things. So he just used a smaller camera. So I'm very, very impressed with him. And he had Zero Dark 30 and Rogue One, also one of, I think,
Rogue
still my
One.
favorite. Yeah, he did cinematography for Rogue One, still I
Nice.
think my favorite Star Wars movie. So yeah, he is cinematographer of Dune Part Two. Music by, of course, the legendary Hans Zimmer. Runtime of a very, I mean, it's long. It's 165 minutes. It's almost 3 hours, but I think it
Did not
was,
feel it at all.
did not feel like anywhere close to 3 hours at all. Here's the thing about this movie that's why everybody's like gushing about it. It was made with a budget of $190 million.
That's it
That's
for
it
part two. For part
for
two.
part two, right?
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
So it, and in at least to date, or at least what is listed, it has made $587 million. So that's in our rubric of times three the budget, it's past that. The numbers that I have might be a little low, because I would swear that this will be a billion dollar movie, but not yet, as at least in the Wikipedia that I'm reading right now. So 190 million with this stellar cast with such amazing effects. This is why we have, or we give the DCU and the MCU such a hard time, because every single movie that they have is 200 or more million dollars, but they don't feel like this. So again, it's not the money, it's the talent. Money helps. So
Yeah,
those are the stats.
plus the time, because you don't rush movies like this.
You just, again, it's I know it's hard to make movies. You have to have so many things fall into place, but that's the thing. It's not about the adaptation. Like, we all know that the books are way different than movies, but it is the smart decision of keeping the things that are important,
I think he really got
cutting
the
the stuff.
feel. The feel of the book.
Cutting, getting the actual message across. Yes, you can, because it's a different medium, you can be, and then we're going to discuss this next week with Three Body Problem about the changes from the book to the TV. Doesn't matter if you keep super true to the book, or you change a bajillion things of the source material. But the point is, the end product needs to be good, needs to make sense, paced well, looked well, acted well. So it's a lot of really good decisions that had happened here, and it's very, very impressive. And we're lucky to have amazing pieces of content like this in our lives. So those are the stats. We'll hop into the plot. Okay, well, who wants to, Chewbacca, you want to jump in the plot, or
No, you can do it. Maybe just do it.
okay,
I think it's gonna be
we'll
fast
just jump
enough.
in. We'll just
Yeah,
jump in. Yeah.
we'll just. And also, this is like the very, very broad plot, because like the funny thing about the movie too is like it feels so big, but it when I'm running through the plot in my head, It's small.
it's pretty
Yeah.
small, right? So we
Small.
start the movie right where we left off. Part one, the destruction of House Atreides. So Lady Jessica and Lisanne Al-Gaib, there's going to be a lot of names.
Oh.
Timothée Chalamet, Paul Atreides is escaping with the Sand People, and they are being hunted down by what's
Harkonnens.
Arrakis troops? No, it's like
Harkonnen. Harkonnens.
what's the name of the
The Emperor's
race of no the race of Stellan Skarsgård,
Harkonnen.
the Harkonnen people.
Harkonnen.
So essentially, Paul and Jessica are trying to escape being wiped out. The Harkonnens are reacquiring Arrakis through very, very violent means. And then we just skip towards, there's a lot of fun action there. Hope you guys watch it, but we'll just skip to the point where, in order for Paul and Jessica to be helped by the Fremen people, they need to gain their trust, starting through Stilgar, which is a Javier Bardem's character, leader of the Fremen troops. The deal was, they kind of, like, at least Stilgar kind of thinks Paul is the chosen one right now, but there still needs to be, either proof is in the pudding. But in order to do that, Lady Jessica needed to become the Fremen's Reverend Mother,
And
right?
not all
So
Fremen are believers, or not all Fremen were
there's,
religious.
yeah,
The
not all
northern and the
Fremen.
south. The north and the
And the
south,
funny
yeah.
thing too, is like they're starting with the northern tribes, so they already know that the people in the south are much more religious, much more fervent to the doctrine. Doctrine, again, we're gonna skip, but that their religion, their doctrine is technically propaganda by the Bene Gesserits to kind of instill to them that there might be this dude that will be coming to release them in the future. Right. So this has been thousands of years of propaganda, thousands of years of basically breeding to create,
Manipulation.
to create. So they're doing it on two fronts. They are the environment, they are brainwashing the environment to have that particular prophet, chosen one, Lisan al-Gaib, that will release them from the clutches of, oppressors at this point, the emperor at this point, the Harkonnens as well. So that's, making sure that the environment is ready for that. But also on the other end, the breeding and the Bene Gesserits for thousands of years have been breeding with different houses and different people to produce a being that is capable of absorbing the
Transcending
power
space and space and
of the
time.
water of life, right? Something like that. So, again, the primer of this, Dune is a place where is the only place where spice is being created. It's a byproduct of the giant sandworms that is, both highly deadly but highly potent. The reason why the Harkonnens are want their clutch on it because spice is essentially the key to interstellar travel. This is a world where there is no longer there's no longer computers because 10,000 years prior there was a war between the thinking machines and the people. Luckily, the people won, and then there. They've realized, we'll never rely on computers. So they rely on mentats, people that can calculate very, very fast as living computers, essentially. And Spice is the one that unlocks their minds to be able to do all of these calculations, not only just for interstellar travel, but essentially to run their computers in their brains. So that's, which is fun because that's not mentioned at all in both movies. You just have to pick it up. So it's a very smart but also risky decision if they need to not really pull 10, 15 minutes to remind us of that. But the idea of it's that's the reason why spice is very valuable. But also the idea that spice is a byproduct of the worms. The worms produce some form of something that unlocks the mind. Right, the mind where you can see all of the past and possibly all of the future, and that's what the Bene Gesserits for thousands of years was trying to do, make that person so that they can control that person, so that they can control the destiny of the universe. That's the overarching story of the Bene Gesserits. Here, in order, so right now, people seem to think, pieces are falling into place that Paul is that person, but there still needs to be some convincing in order for Jessica and Paul to be protected by the Fremen. The deal was Jessica needs to be the new Reverend Mother, or like their main mother in their religion, because their mother is dying. Part of that is being able, now Jessica needs to drink the water of life. And then my first question here is like, right, so, oh, so you just drink the water of life and then you get these powers. Why don't more people drink the water of life? So the water of life is highly poisonous. Only very, very trained people, or trained Bene Gesserits or Reverend Mothers, who are technically the best Bene Gesserit in that particular world, are the ones who's able to survive the water of life by transmuting the poison in their bodies. But when Jessica agreed to this so that, Paul and her can be protected and live, she is also pregnant. So there is a little unborn person who is like mixed with this. So and that's going to be discussed a little bit further down. That unborn daughter is named Alia. At this point, instead of forcing his way to be the prophet, the savior of the Fremen, Paul does the more traditional route, where it's like, hey, I don't mean to lead, I don't mean to like
He knows
take
it's
over.
bullshit. He knows
Yeah, he.
it's manipulation by the Bene Gesserit.
So, and here's where we'll kind of put a mark on it. Paul, from the start of the movie until almost the end of the movie, has been adamant that he didn't want to make the prophecy true, right? Or follow what the propaganda has been built by the Bene Gesserit, because he already has a little bit of the foresight of the future, and he's starting to see that if the prophecy comes through, it will lead to billions of people dying in a holy war under his name. So that's why, hey, I don't want to be the leader. I just want to fight alongside with you and kill the people that killed my family. So that's where, a good portion of the movie is guerrilla tactics against the Emperor and the Harkonnens, destroying their spice manufacturing, ruining the spice production, so that it'll cripple the Harkonnens and give them a lot of trouble. And this is where Paul is starting to learn to become a Fremen, starting to grow his relationship with Shani, which is Zendaya's character. And then he does become like pretty cool, pretty amazing in a lot of stuff. A little bit of
Fighting,
because of
yeah.
his a little bit of his training, but also a little bit of his using of the spice, because once you're out there, the spice just gets into you. Again, he learns the language. He takes part in riding the sandworm to become a fully fledged fighter, what they call a Fideikant. And then it's funny because
Fideikant. Lisa
Fideikant,
Naib.
yeah. So there's gonna be names. So his name is Paul Atreides. When he becomes a real fighter, a Fideikant, he gets another name, right? Or he's given a name, right? And what was given to him was Usul, which is
Usul.
root, like he's good foundation. So this is given to him by Stilgar, right? But also you're given a name, but also you choose a fighting name, like a soldier name. And then he picks Muad'Dib,
What?
right? Muad'Dib is the little sand rat, right? And it's funny because people thought that's like, oh, you're a rat, you're a rodent. But no, that's a smart name. The sand rats can survive, it's very, has survived Arrakis, this harsh environment. Produces their own water by themselves, very, very wily, very, very smart. So now, okay, so it's Paul Atreides, Usul Muad'Dib, but also the other name that is bestowed upon him is like Lisan Al Gaib, which means like the Messiah of that place. All right, a lot of names.
Maybe.
So we progress with a lot more of guerrilla warfare as. Jessica, now the Reverend Mother, fans the fire of the prophecy, both in the people in the north, and then soon people in the south, because with all of the defeats that the Harkonnen has been happening because of the fighters, the guerrilla tactics that they've been happening, they have been a little bit more aggressive, and then they're wanting to wipe out the Fremen. So. To be protected, Lady Jessica goes to the south, and now Paul is now being asked to go to the south as well to protect his mom, protect the people, which is puts him closer, a little bit closer to the prophecy, right? Quick side note around here, or the parallel path is we are seeing the Emperor, played by Christopher Walken, and his daughter, who is going to
Oh,
be
amazing.
who's going to take over as the Empress at some point when the Emperor dies. Florence Pugh. Florence Pugh is also under the Bene Gesserit training, so she is also part of the plan of the Bene Gesserits as well, to not only to kind of manipulate the politics of the universe, but also produce a possible heir in the future. That's why she's being trained as one of the people that can, control the water or survive the water spice, the water of life and stuff. But now, Florence Pugh has started to figure out that it was the Emperor's idea to wipe out. It was the Emperor who ordered the wiping out of the Atreides family, because they're becoming a little bit more independent,
Liquidation. Yep.
a little bit harder to control. And then the control is not necessarily Emperor's part, but the control is the Bene Gesserit's part, right? Not only did Lady Jessica, Rebecca Ferguson, produced an heir that was not 100% approved by the Bene Gesserits through Paul, because the idea was they weren't supposed to produce a male heir or a male person, a
Yeah.
male candidate, but until 100 years from now. So 1,000 years, what their plan is, was like year 900. But because Lady Jessica loved Paul's father, Leto Atreides, that much, they figured like, hey, let's make this the Lisan al Gaib candidate instead of something else. So yeah, so they wiped out
And the plan was for Paul to be with Fader. Now, I think Fader. That was the original plan. Austin Butler.
Oh, okay. If
oh,
he
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah.
Female.
Correct, correct. If Paul was supposed to be female. And then supposed to be wed with Fade Rotha, which
Fade,
is one of the
Fader,
kids of
Fade, Fade Rotha.
Fade yeah. Rotha, which is one of the kids of Harkonnen. But you know, we'll figure out in the end if you really think about it. We'll pause for the spoiler for now, but that was the original plan, but we'll see the family tree, weird family tree later. so that's kind of you know, the one that kind of illuminates a little bit more the plans of the Bene Gesserits, which are the ones that are manipulating both prophecy and dogma and propaganda to be able to control this. So there's a little bit of like, yeah, Aryan race thing. We're going to produce the best heir.
Kinda, I kind of even hate them more than the Harkonnens.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. And then that's
yeah.
where we really think about the movie. That's why Paul was very adamant to not make the prophecy real, because he knows that this is all manufactured, and he knows that it is the Bene Gesserits acting through the emperor that made this all happen. So at the same time, because the Harkonnens were experiencing a lot of defeat at the hands of the Fremen troops on the ground, Baron Harkonnen, Stellan Skarsgård, got really, really upset with Dave Bautista's character. And yeah. Then now, instead, you know, luckily he didn't kill him right away, but even more ruthlessly, he wanted to replace Dave Bautista with another one of his nephews, which is Fade Rotha, played by Austin Butler. Psychotic, sociopathic character that is all about killing and war. But you know, as there's a little bit of a moment there where kind of like, all right, he is psychotic, he is sociopathic, he killed his mother because he's just that evil, but he can be controlled because he has a lot of issues and he can be controlled by sexual desires, which Lea Seydoux,
if it was Lea Seydoux, she can control me and everything.
I was like,
as well.
I, you know. And Lea Seydoux can control it. Plus the fact that Bene Gesserits can control their pheromones to not only attract mates, but also make sure that they make babies and the gender of that baby as well. Because one of the smaller plot points was, at this point, the Bene Gesserits are not 100% sure whether Lisan al Gaib is Paul Atreides, if he can survive the water, so they're kind of hedging their bets by making another one through Lea Seydoux and Fade Rotha. Fade Rotha then starts a very more destructive way to defeat the Fremen by just like wiping everything out using air superiority or like explosive power to just like kill everybody. Then at this point, it's like, why are we trying to live with the Fremen? Let's just kill them all, and that's what he's tried to do. And that's where Paul started becoming forced to kind of not necessarily complete the prophecy, but go to the places where the prophecy may be completed. So now, instead of like just staying up north, you have to go south to not only protect the people there, protect himself, protect the people, protect the fighters, because Fade Rotha is just like this destroying everything. Along these lines too, we figure out that Paul's favorite teacher, friend, Josh Brolin, has survived the part one, the invasion of the
What's his name?
Gurney.
Gurney.
Gurney. Gurney Halleck. Gurney is now a smuggler, and he, you know, he became
smuggler
a smuggler
musician.
So.
Smuggler musician,
frustrated musician, but he became a smuggler so that he could protect the remaining survivors that they had. So he traded a trip for, you know, out of Arrakis for his remaining people, and then he stayed to help these smugglers in town smuggle more spice. And yeah, there's a little bit of fight where, you know, Paul kind of picked or saved, however which one say, Gurney from this world by, you know, drafting him with the war with as a fighter for the Harkonnens as well. And then this was important because Gurney knew the place where the Atreides Atomics, which I didn't know, I didn't know that from the books or whatever, but yeah, he knew where he hid the atomics, where apparently every family or every ruler of a world in this universe has a stockpile of atomics, which can destroy one planet. Like, you have enough atomics that you can destroy a planet. That's why not one family fights another family directly, because you can just technically wipe each other's planets out. So they're going to use these atomics to at least wipe all the spice fields of Arrakis, so nobody can have spice. So that's kind of like one use that they had. So, right, we're towards the end now. There is now a plan, or right before the end, Paul, who has kind of in his actions convinced at least convince at least Javier Bardem, Stilgar, that he is the chosen one. Just during the course of his regular actions, he is a good fighter. He wants to become a Fremen, which is part of the prophecy. And he also passed becoming a Fedaiken by riding a sandworm, and the sandworm that he rode was one of the bigger ones.
Right? What a scene, my God.
Yeah, so everything just kind of is falling into place. And now with an attack in the Holy Land of the Fremen.
I also think this was the tipping point for Stilgar.
And a few others, right? Yeah. I mean, everybody except Shani.
No, I mean, Stilgar was already a loyal believer, but this is when he became a zealot, I think. I know you're the chosen one, but after this, you can have my firstborn type of craziness.
Yeah. So, yep. And again, this is where, like, when you start watching the movie, you kind of start seeing how unintentionally funny Stilgar was with his fanboying of Paul, because he's kind of like documenting all of their adventures, all of their battles, all of the things that he won, the accolades he's been doing. So even the choices of the name was kind of like all in line. Like, you know, even him refusing to become the Lisan al Gaib is like, oh, that's part of the prophecy. He is too humble. So it's like, it's becoming like really, it's really fun in the movie. But in the end, with the destruction of the Holy Land of the Fremen, which is kind of like a place where they have metric tons of water, which they don't drink, or it's just like the water that they get from every Fremen that has died, was destroyed by Fedrotha. And that kind of forces Paul to go to the south and go through the motions, or get the tools in order to beat the Harkonnens. Tools, which is drinking the water of life. So drinking the water of life.
This is where I've been thinking about it, like semantics comes into point, but we were discussing about like prophecy and manipulation, where this wasn't a real prophecy, but just the manipulation of the Bene Gesserit. But like, doesn't it feel prophetic in a way that Paul kept fighting it, but it still ended up where he had no choice but to do it? So it's like, you know, like chicken and egg thing. Like, is it really a prophecy, yeah, or he was just pulling strings, but then again, if it still happens, but okay, maybe.
See, it's layers of seeing the future, because I mean, I'm assuming some Bene Gesserits can see some of the futures too, and this is kind of what they kind of saw. Right, so
we were talking about the first one also, where when was it? I think it was you when we were discussing this off there, where Paul and some people were saying online, like the mom was also like evil or one of the villains because she did this, but like for her survival, her son's survival is the only thing that matters. So I would do the same shit. I'd manipulate anybody if it meant protecting my son. And then for Paul, I think from my interpretation of the movie, I'm not one of the smart ones, but the way it was looking like, it's like he could have avoided the prophecy, but it would have killed Chani, or you know, the scene
it would have killed
the,
everybody.
The scene
he wouldn't have the tools to protect the Fremen.
Yeah, so it's like he had no choice as well if he wanted to survive. It's just like,
and even if it wasn't it wasn't survival, right? It was, you know, he wouldn't be able to avenge the death of his family, because I think that's the main driving force. Kill the Harkonnens, right? If you kill the Harkonnens, essentially you need to defeat the Emperor too. If you defeat the Emperor, it means that you're gonna take control over the power of the Emperor as well. So all of those things ladder up. So you're right. I mean, that's, I still also don't know the answer, but the idea is all the actions has led to him that he needed to get the power to be able to lead the Fremen against the Harkonnens and the Emperor. And this is, you know, drinking the water of life as a male, which has never been done. There hasn't been, you know, few Bene Gesserits can survive the water of life. And no man has ever done it. And that's the difference. You know, for the Bene Gesserits, for them is they absorb, the water of life gives them the power to all the memories of all of the Reverend Mothers ever, right? So essentially past. What they're trying to do is like, you know, maybe a male who can do the same will not only have the past, but also the future. That's why they're breeding this person. And Paul was that person. He was able to survive.
If you think about it, maybe it's not even seeing the future in so much as, because you've seen so much of the past, you can see the threads of, you know, like the dominoes crumbling, instead of like...
That is the point. It's
like a real vision. It's more like you can simulate it because of,
no, what, of so all the... 100%. And that's why when it was very specific here, once Paul survived it, he doesn't say, I don't only see the past, but I see all types of futures.
And he said, there's a path right in the middle. Yeah. I like that scene.
Yeah. And that's
basically, he did the Doctor Strange, like just one path, right?
Yeah.
Winning.
Yeah. Or, I mean, he picked one path.
Yeah.
Right. Right. He could pick a bunch of different paths, but for him, like the path that will lead through survival of the Fremen or defeat of Arrakis is this path. This storm that is coming to what is the fucking name of that place? Arrakeen, which is the center of Arrakis. Like that path he saw. So that's the other thing too. And we were talking about this speech that will lead him to lead the Fremen. It was kind of rushed and it was kind of like not heartfelt, but one of the interviews that I've read is like, yeah, that was intended, because if you are Paul and you've seen every type of future, you're basically reading a script, right? When you're reading a script instead of internalizing it and performing it, you don't have as much connection with it. So that, okay, he was like, I know what's gonna happen already. So but I need
this,
to speak.
I just like with the voice. Oh, they used it so sparingly and in just the right moments that I can barely remember. I can probably practically remember all the times they just did it in part two, and it always had an impact. And it's so good. And actually, as you said, the scene where he goes in front of everybody is like one of my favorite cinematic moments. Like,
just so beautiful.
And
it looks
and
great.
Like I told you with the first one also, there's just something perfect with casting Timothy, because he looks that like that soft boy next door type. But when he shouts and it screams, it's like, it's more like you can feel his emotion, intention more than if they casted somebody with a physical intimidating factor, you know. This is just soft, handsome, pretty boy that screaming at everybody, and it's like it stops, like, oh, it, oh, his shouts have stayed with me, like in the first movie when he shouts at his mom, get off me, you did this to me. Oh, it's just so good. And here in this movie also, when he shouts at his mom again, and like, that's not hope. It's just so good. I love it. And then he, in the scene where you said that he does read the script, but then he basically calls everybody to a square. Like, oh, fight me? Fight me? You think you can take me? Fucking take me. Oh.
He has also now, again, he has all of, you know, seeing all the paths. He has the voice too, which we didn't even discuss, part of the power of the Fremen is to control people through their voice. So all of the abomination things that the Bene Gesserit thought was here, well, this is the product, this is the result of your meddling. So you found this. So yeah, he was able to rise the army of the Fremen to fight for him, to fight the Harkonnens. Again, there's like a very strategic, you know, that's like another combination too. That's not supernatural. Like, his attack on Arakeen was not, it's very strategic. Like, they used an oncoming, that, you know, knowing that a storm was coming, being able to lure the emperor himself down so that they can kill or like capture both the emperor and kill the Harkonnens in one fell swoop. Having the atomics to be used as a way to destroy mountains so that they can also use the sandworms awesome shit, right? So all of that was combination of military strategy, but also a little bit of premonition. And then at the end, you know, they were able to storm the castle, kill Baron Harkonnen, and then fight for
and the reveal of we forget that he is Harkonnen as well. The mom is the daughter of Baron.
See, how
Harkonnen.
Did that happen? So the Lady Jessica is the daughter of
Baron Harkonnen.
Baron.
Through Bene Gesserit means.
Oh, okay.
So they were inbreeding. So, they were inbreeding. Hope the female Paul supposedly with Fade.
Fade
Ratha.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, when the atomics, right, it only opens to the genetic material of Atreides. So it worked for Paul.
No, he is Atreides. His dad. Yeah,
he's Atreides.
But his mom is Harkonnen.
Harkonnen.
Oh.
Jessica is Harkonnen.
Which I'm glad that they clarified that, you know, Jessica didn't even know until she drank the water.
The water.
Right, so that's the other thing too. So technically, Paul and so what in the end, Paul kills Baron Harkonnen very unceremoniously.
Stilgar did it.
No, Paul did.
Was it Paul? I thought it was Stilgar.
Stilgar was fighting. Stilgar was just like fanboying in the middle, then Gurney was fighting against Dave Bautista. And in the end, Paul was gonna kill the emperor, but Florence Pugh, you know, mentioned like, "Hey, I'll just wed you, just release my father. Don't kill him. We'll wed. No lives need not to be taken, etc., etc." But the other, you know, the other thing that the emperor mentioned, like, you know, nobody is going to follow you. None of the other houses will follow you if you take the throne by force. So he then challenges the emperor to a duel, chooses, and Fade Rotha, of course, Austin Butler, volunteers to be the champion. They have this epic fight with the...
I love that Fade mimicked him as well with a "May thy knife better,"
which is now the one of the most mean things ever. Because, like, yeah, if somebody dishes out an awesome line to you, and you're not prepared, it's like, shit, did I need to have a line?
That's so cool.
That's so cool. Let me just repeat it. So
with his own twist,
And there's just a little bit of like factoid here why they used May Thy Knife Chip and Shatter, because I don't think that Denis Villeneuve's version of Dune will use what's Jason Momoa's name?
Oh, Duncan Idaho.
Idaho.
One of the ugliest character names ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're going to use the Duncan Idaho arc anymore. The fact that, you know, this is kind of like an ode to a very, very important character in the book, a character that will be or has been reincarnated so many times, the character that is actually the Lisan Al-Kaif, but mistaken. But they, you know, that was Duncan Idaho's salute. So in a very important part, they kind of
I love that they he combined it with the Fremen saying.
It makes sense. Like, it's super cool. They have an awesome fight scene. Eventually, you know, after a couple of stabs to Paul Atreides, which I actually thought, like, is he gonna die? No, you know, he wins, he becomes the new emperor. The emperor kneels to him, but at the end of the movie, as foreseen, none of the other houses recognize Paul's rise to emperorship, despite beating the emperor, despite going to be marrying Florence Pugh, the emperor's daughter. So this is where the holy war starts, because now, you know, everybody, you know, this tiny dude has not only killed Baron Harkonnen, defeated the emperor almost single-handedly. So now everybody who isn't even a believer now believes. So everybody except the only gripe that I have in this movie, Chani, who has been told from the beginning that I don't want to lose you, because if the prophecy happens, I'm gonna fucking lose you. A lot of people are gonna die, etc., etc. But Chani's like, no, go, 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 go. And the end, Chani sees that, oh, she was taken aback. In the book, she was a concubine. She was okay with the plan. She understood the plan that, you know, Paul needs to marry.
But I mean, she had the point then, because he did start acting different.
He did say that he was gonna have to.
I warned you.
But I mean, it's realistic. I mean, she got what she wanted, and she didn't like it. I like that she responded like that. Not, like, she didn't go through.
The
which if Arnie doesn't know, it's a depart. Oh, Art Jones said it's a departure from the book, because in the book she was okay with being the real love, but a consort, just like the mom, like his mom, who wasn't really wedded to Duke Leto, to Oscar Isaac, which is the consort. But here she.
So I mean, there's a lot of things that they've trimmed here and combined and updated. This is one of the updates. Like, I, you know, Denis knew that having the love of your life just like following a white man is not gonna fly now, you know. Now, so they gave Chani a little bit more agency, right? Agency, a little bit more control, a little bit, but also it opens up a fresh storyline in the next movie, right? You know, they can use this departure as, because like in the books, you know, Chani was pregnant, right? And they had
they lost a baby.
They lost a baby, and the next baby was like a sandworm, but it's weird. There's a lot of weird stuff that had happened with Chani and their kids, but the idea is like, all right, at least this is, all the changes were pretty good. But yeah, that's where the movie ends. The movie ends with the ascendancy to the throne of Paul Atreides, essentially making all the prophecies true about what had happened and how it had happened, how the Fremen will be liberated by this person from the stars that, you know, was not a Fremen but becomes a Fremen that can see the future, etc., etc. And then now starts billions of people fighting with and for and against Paul and the Fremen, because again, weirdly, there's only one place in the entire universe where spice is, And yeah, everybody wants a piece of Arrakis now. So yeah, that is Dune Part Two. I'm gonna throw it out to you. Your favorite things that stood out to you.
Well, the whole infrared scene, that
Literally, that's that.
like if you really want to recommend people to watch it on IMAX, it's for that scene, because it's very like it's very big, right? This is like I guess like 1 million to 1 million Harkonnen. The fight scene was meh, but it's more of the build up, right? And then you see like the three remaining Atreides for some reason. So the traitor, I think that's the Asian guy, right? That's the guy who betrayed
The
yeah, the
doctor.
doctor, yeah. So he got his comeuppance in a way. But basically it's to introduce Austin Butler as the new heir, basically. So that scene was like amazing. For me, like the whole, again, I didn't watch it at the best possible situation, but perhaps when it comes out to Max or whatever, I'll get to appreciate it more. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I did see the heavy-handed manipulation of prophecy to suit one's needs. I mean, we've seen it in real time. I mean, in the real world as well. Like, oh yeah, this so and this is this and this and this. Yeah, that's what happened. So now it's foretold, blah blah blah. So there's that. And then, of course, if they do make part three or the Dune Messiah, like that there's a Harkonnen baby growing with Lea Seydoux. So
Oh,
that's a
that was confirmed that part of the reason why Lea Seydoux seduced perfect last name Austin Butler was to ensure that, you know, what if let's say Paul dies, they have an heir, and then if Paul lives, you know, they still have Paul. So it's like, all right, you know, they're just like again, you have to admit the Bene Gesserit were like
They
that's
play the
awesome.
long game. They play the long
Fucking
game.
awesome.
That's why when even when what's her face? Charlotte Rampling, like she knew like, oh, like Paul is like basically taking over. Well, we still have our seeds elsewhere, so we could regain control eventually. That's why they were fine with him becoming emperor, right? And also the reveal that Anya Taylor-Joy was the
Oh,
sister.
100%. That
I
was
mean,
I meet in the theater. Like I was just watching, and then once, you know, in that dream when he was like walking towards the beach and on the sand, and as the sand crested, there's an actual beach. So there's water in Arrakis in the future. Awesome. And then Anya Taylor-Joy looks at the camera, doesn't even like speak. It's just like looks at the camera and everything is ADR. I was like,
And
yes.
she does look like a Harkonnen hybrid too. Look at that. I mean,
Perfect casting. Oh.
the forehead, the almost missing eyebrows. But yeah, and then of course, so that's also gonna come into play, because because the mom, Lady Jessica, is talking to the unborn child. So that's like the conversations there. So is she a threat? Is she gonna be, because I haven't read Dune Messiah
Yeah,
at
if you,
all.
I don't want to
So
spoil it to you unless you want me.
yeah,
Yeah, I'm not a fan
I'll
of the
probably.
Messiah. I'm not a fan of the books after the first one.
Well, I mean, Dune is a thick book to begin with, and then to add more stuff to that,
Okay,
it can
part of
get really
me is
weird.
like, don't make any more. Wait, let
Well,
me have this. But
but
if
he
you
made
know,
six and the son made twenty.
maybe he can fix it. So we'll see.
Well,
It's out of my hands anyway.
maybe Denis could be the Dave Filoni of the Dune universe. Because yeah, there's a reason why Dune did not become as big as, I mean, pop culture as Star Wars, is because there's a lot of the succeeding novels that didn't really pan out, right? Even just like Discworld and all these other properties that we have been looking at, right? So yeah, I mean, from the interviews, it looks like Denis is willing to make a part three.
No, he wants to. That was he, you know, he's on the record saying that he wants to complete his trilogy. And
So
with the
he, but he
success,
also
I
said
don't think.
he'll only do it if he can make it better than the last two. He did say
Yeah.
that too.
mean, it's possible. And the thing is, he specifically hired Florence Pugh and Anya Taylor-Joy, just like he hired Zendaya and told her, "Okay, you're going to be introed in the first movie. Not much to do."
It's a good plan. Like it's like
But
we're,
on the second movie, it's going to be you. So on the third movie, so he introed Florence and Anya, and Lea Seydoux could also have more things to do in book three, in part three. So yeah, I mean, it's also genius that they hired a young cast so that at least there'll be, unless any accidents happen, knock on wood, I mean, everybody could still be alive in like 5 years' time to shoot it and all that stuff. So that's really good. And again, I mean, I need to know what happened. Okay, so now the Harkonnens are gone, or at least the leadership is gone. You
it's
know, where's
just
that gonna go, right? So, I mean, we've seen enough of, you know, Game of Thrones, seeing that, yeah, it's not enough to kill off the leadership, as you can see with Paul, because he survived. He became a threat, right? So yeah, so we'll see. I'm excited for part three, and I hope, like, because my wife hasn't seen it, so she wants to watch part one and part two at the same consecutively. That's a long sitting, so yeah, so we'll see.
It's a fun sitting though. Isabella loved this series.
Oh, what's your
Yeah.
rating?
Oh, my rating, I would say, based on how I watched it for now, it's a 9. I bet it will be a 10 if I just saw it what's supposed to be shown, but you know, desperate measures. I was dead for a week and a half, so you know.
I'll go
Yeah.
so Chewbacca
Go.
can close us out. But again, I think I've mentioned it up top. It is the perfect combination of amazing storytelling, which is a challenge to adapt it from a book that is beloved. So the choices of adding or trimming or
Changing.
highlighting and changing a few things is very, very tricky. But in the end, it's a very simple story. You Denis did not baby the audience at all. He didn't have to spoon feed every single plot point and clarify every single thing that is confusing. He prioritized maximizing the medium of the movie. So it's an actual awe-inspiring experience to watch. The number of amazing shots that I've seen in this movie is mind-boggling. So much so that I bought Dune 1 on Blu-ray, because again, in the end, physical media is dying, but I bought Dune 1 in Blu-ray in preparation of getting Dune 2 in Blu-ray as well, because I feel that this is one of those movies where I will watch with director's commentary. I will watch the art book and everything like that. So that's just so amazing. And again, the basic thing is great storytelling meets great action meets great visual storytelling. It's just a resounding 10 for me. And that's the reason why this is kind of like my second most favorite movie of all time, because it had all those, plus the difficulty of appeasing the fandom, because like there's always going to be people that will dissect and break down something that
Yeah.
they love too much, because they have it something and they have it in their heads to look to for it to be this way, or
Yeah.
storylines that are very important that were not taken. But I think the update to the story is perfect, and also it elevated the first movie. The first movie was already great, and it wasn't gonna crack my top 10 movies of the all time, but
Part
that's
one,
because
part
there's
two.
so much exposition in Dune. It's very difficult. It's like Game of Thrones level politics with sci-fi, with religion. So it was already difficult, but I'd still enjoyed it. It was still beautiful. It's still perfectly acted. And then you drop this, so it not only is great standalone, but watch it Dune 1, Dune 2. Oh man. And now, even if it takes 3, 4, 5 years to make Dune 3, the experience of watching all those three together
Yeah.
again, I think it's going to be a masterful experience. And that's what we want. These are long movies. Time is the only thing that we can't get more of, regardless of how much we try. So if a thing makes me this hype, and makes me realize that I didn't waste my time watching something, I'm all for it. So this is a 10 for me. Shabox, close us down.
Yeah, so this one is, yeah, it's in my top 10, possibly top 5. Need to give more time and think about it, but I just love it. This was like a made-for-me movie. The sound, the cast, the visuals, everything was there. But it's more importantly, the feel, the emotion, you know. Made me laugh. I felt the action of and the intentions of the director very well. My favorite parts were anytime they used the voice, anytime Paul shouted, the speech in front of the Fremen was the highlight for me. And
for me, it's the walk. You know him, like, just the, like, that's the top shot.
Give Snow Fox like, shot.
Well, first, when he came to the south, and there was the shot of him walking
in the sandworm
behind him. Mm-hmm. Perfect. And then him walking through the sea of people, top shot. And mm-hmm. he was like parting. Oh, rah,
it's so good. Zendaya was a great. What they did with her character was great. The changes. The only negative thing I can think of is, if it's true that I saw on Twitter the salaries for the actress, and they under fucking paid Rebecca Ferguson by a lot. That's the only comment I have.
Denis was asked about those characters, like, how did you get these people to work for you? And he was like very upfront, where it's like, hey, your character is very small. Your character is very small. But you're going to develop it next time. Are you okay? Because, like,
yeah.
That's also one reason why the budget is only $190 million. Imagine if every single actor asked
for $20 million. It's Rebecca Ferguson. She's the mom. She's one of the main ones.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, it's whoever negotiated her contract, right?
Yeah, well, but still. But yeah. The silence to the Reverend Mother at the end.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome. Oh, and even the Reverend Mother acknowledging the Reverend Mother was also a highlight. Yeah. And another highlight was Florence Pugh's outfit. Did you notice? Mm-hmm. Like, it started with the open, nothing, and then it started something, and then it started closing on, like the world was closing on. Oh, such a good costume design. I mean, Feyd-Ratha was a highlight as well. Stilgar was the surprise. I didn't expect him to be one of the X factors of the show. But I scored better than a 10 if I could, but 10 is what we'll do.
Quick question. I don't know if you guys talked about it. So remember the army that the Emperor lent the Harkonnen?
The Sardaukar.
Yeah. Where were they?
They were the ones in front of the
In front of the.
Oh, so
they were
they
were the ones who the worms came in and attacked.
Oh, okay.
Everything in white.
Yeah, everything.
I like the fact that everything is, like, you know, it is very difficult to shoot in sand.
Yeah.
But you still have to, like, differentiate. So, like, all right, the Fremen were like gray and black, except for Chani, who had like a gold suit at the end. Oh no, that was in the dream.
Yeah.
And then you have the Harkonnens in clearly black suits, and then all the Sardaukar in white.
Oh, okay. So
I want to watch it again.
Fight by the sandworm.
I'm waiting for my Blu-ray.
Yeah, the sandworm, the sand, the nukes. Those are the ones that nullified. And besides, Fremen are even better than Sardaukar. 1v1. That's how scared. They've just been fighting guerrilla style, and there's how many did they have? Like 20,000, he said. Oh, when he was talking to Gurney. How many people were running under you?
2,000.
No, at the start.
When they had 200. 200. Yeah, 200.
Yeah, you did this with 200. There's millions in the south. Like,
yeah. And it's part of the being exposed to spice as well, right? You know, that's the
harsh life. The harsh life. Mm-hmm. Living there, it's gonna make you want it more, you know. So
that's it.
What an amazing movie.
Amazing movie. Thanks for joining our discussion of Dune 2. I'm assuming like we'll probably like bring this up, across, all of our other discussions as well. But coming up in the next few weeks, we also have Argylle from Netflix, only because my ex-girlfriend Dallas
Bryce
Bryce
Dallas
Dallas
Howard.
Howard is there, and my ex-boyfriend Henry Cavill is there, and there's a cat in a backpack. One of the reasons why I'm watching it. And
Dua
Dua Lipa
Lipa.
too. I didn't realize, like, oh my God.
Dua
Chewbacca and I, like, it's one of my favorite sci-fi books, trilogies, Three Body Problem. It's funny because I didn't realize that Three Body Problem was touted as unadaptable, right? It is the
And they
book
did
that
it.
is and so far they did. Like, I am very, very pleased, but like
I
it's
do
really rough too.
wanna after this I wanna watch the Chinese one in it's in Peacock.
Oh, it's in P I'm
Yeah.
watching I've started watching it in
YouTube.
YouTube for a while now. It's 21 episodes. But I haven't finished it yet because I saw again a YouTube recap describing Netflix versus the Tencent version of it, and I wasn't it's a little too true to the books, so it is a different experience, and the blatant censorship of some aspects of it, like so
Understand.
which is fine because like the book for me, it's the sci-fi that's most important, right? It's not about, there is underlying cultural stuff, but it's the sci-fi that's most important. But Three, the Body Problem was supposed to be unadaptable. Like, how do you adapt 18 million years? So that's kind of like, all right, cool. So it's good. I'm very excited to discuss this with y'alls. But again, please subscribe to our channel. We're on youtube.com/plus63HP. Hit that like button, hit that notification bell so you get notified whenever all of our new episodes drop. We're on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook with the handle at plus63HP. If you don't want to watch us video on demand, we are on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. And we stream live on Twitch our recordings. So if you want to join in and discuss our discussion, we are at twitch.com/plus63HP. Final goodbyes, Arnie.
All right. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Final goodbyes, Chabox.
Yeah. See you next week. We enjoyed this and can't wait for more.
Thank you very much. See you next time. Bye.
Like and subscribe.
Just wait and get my.